My name is Dave Schmidt. Just as a little introductory, I'm a general and vascular surgeon. I practice in Waukesha. I'm with seven other surgeons, and we have one woman in our group, and I practice primarily out of Waukesha Memorial Hospital, but I'm not like an employee of ProHealth or Aurora or Wheaton. We're an independent group. And so I'll share a little bit about my perspective, a little bit on men's health, and then hopefully have plenty of time for questions, because I usually find that there's quite a few questions when I've given this talk before. So let's always open with a word of prayer. Lord, thank you for this time today, for the men that have come from around the country to worship today through dedicating time to you to be better stewards and leaders of their families. And I just thank you for the guys here that hopefully we'd all learn something and be able to share together in this time. In Jesus' name, amen. although I'm a physician, one of the... in my own family's health, my grandfather died at age 50. He died 5 years before I was born, and he was a farmhand up in the northwest part of the state. He had chest pain one day. The farmer that he worked for put him in the back of his car, and they were taking him to the hospital, and he never made it to the hospital alive. You can fast forward a little bit to my dad, who is now 81 and actually has just been moved into a home for Alzheimer's patients. But at 81, he's lived 31 years old, you know, beyond the age of his own dad. And that's been a significant thing, in part due to some of the healthcare changes. My dad's had to have heart bypass surgery, where that was unavailable to my grandfather 62 years ago. And but I think that there's a lot of things we can maybe discuss a little bit about the healthcare acts that are going on in Congress today, if you have questions about that. But healthcare has been a very complicated issue. But one of the things that I think that is missing from the healthcare acts and is personal responsibility and personal responsibility for our own health and for our family's health. And I think that stewardship of your family's health is important. For 8 years, I sat on the board at Washington Memorial Hospital and on the Pro Healthcare Board, and the advertising, all that advertising that you see on TV, whether it's for an Aurora ad or a Pro Healthcare ad or for anything like that, it's not directed at anybody in this room. It's directed at your wives, and because they know that it is the women today in a family who direct healthcare, and if they want to make the hospital or the clinic appealing to a family, they only have to make it appealing to the wife or to the women in the family, because that's where how your health is going to be directed. But I want to share with you a little thing that a friend of mine gave me a couple years ago, that in the beginning God created the heavens and the earth and populated the earth with broccoli, cauliflower, and spinach, green and yellow and red vegetables of all kinds, so that man and women would live long and healthy lives. Then, using God's great gifts, and this is really appropriate, Satan created Ben and Jerry's Krispy Kremes, and Satan said, "Do you want chocolate with that?" And man said, "Yes." And the woman said, "As long as you're at it and you want to add some sprinkles," and they gained 10 pounds, and Satan smiled. And God created healthful yogurt, so the woman might keep her figure that man found so fair, and Satan brought forth white flour and wheat and sugar from the cane and combined them. And women went from a size 6 to a size 4. This is what you see here stays here when you leave here. And God said, "Try my fresh green salad." And Satan presented Thousand Island dressing, buttery croutons, and garlic toast on a side. And man and women unfastened their belts. And then God said, "I have sent you healthy vegetables and olive oil to cook them." And Satan brought forth deep fried fish, chicken fried steak, so big it needed its own plate. Has anybody seen the show with Man versus Food?
Yeah.
And man gained weight, and his cholesterol went through the roof, and God created a light, fluffy cake and named it angel food and said it's good, and Satan created chocolate cake and named it devil's food. God then brought forth running shoes so his children might lose those extra pounds, and Satan gave him cable TV with the remote control so mom would have to toil changing channels, and man and woman laughed and cried before the flickering blue light and gained more weight. Then God brought forth the potato, naturally low in fat and brimming with nutrition, and Satan peeled off the skin, sliced starchy center into chips and deep fried, and man gained more pounds. God gave them beef so lean that man might consume fewer calories and satisfy his appetite. Satan created McDonald's and its 99-cent double cheeseburger and said, "Would you like fries with that?" And man said, "Yes," and supersized them. And Satan said, "It is good." And man went into cardiac arrest. And God sighed and created quadruple bypass surgery. This is my family story right to the key. Then God created cuts to the healthcare system. So, again, stewardship is a challenge in the families for our own health, and it's been for the most part, unfortunately, we've delegated that to someone other than ourselves. And one of the challenges I'd like you to think about today is: have you either nurtured or squandered the blessings that God has entrusted you with? That today, if you get rid of some of the obvious things like smoking, alcohol to excess, our bodies have been created fairly resilient, and that from the ages of 1 to 44, the most common causes of male deaths in this country are accidental. But not until after age 45 does heart disease and other cancers become in the picture for causing death. And the biggest, again, if you get rid of smoking, because that's actually lung cancer is still the number one cancer. But the number one thing that where we have gotten into trouble as Americans is being overweight. And today, 1 in 3 Americans is overweight. And by overweight, I mean anywhere from 25 pounds to double our weight. And then you're considered obese if you have what's called a BMI, or body mass index of greater than 30. And that's basically you're twice as heavy as what you should be. And think about where you were when you were 18 and graduated from high school, and then where you are today. Because when you're 18 to 21, that's kind of at your peak performance for men from a physical standpoint. And especially after the age of 40, it becomes very difficult. But I think you really need to have to do a self-assessment as to where you are physically and how you can regain some of your health. And it's never too late. The Biggest Loser I know is on TV as a series right now. And there's, I don't know if you've seen the advertisements for the new series. It's called My 600-Pound Body. It's going to go through a series of people that got to be so heavy, they're like now like three times or more what their body weight should be. And a lot of times we think, well, I'm not that bad. I'm not that out of weight, overweight, or out of shape. But again, for those of us over the age of 40, it's harder and harder to regain both control of our health or to get back some of the things that we've lost. And that by we develop bad habits, we become more sedentary. But for men over the age of 40, really between the age of 40 and the age of 60, we should all be losing a half a pound a year if we're staying in good shape. And the reason is because our testosterone gets so low that we start to lose bone density and muscle mass after the age of 40, whereas the average person gains at least a pound a year between 40 and 60, when you should be losing half a pound. So you should actually drop 10 pounds in those 20 years by loss of muscle mass and loss of bone density, but most of us gain a minimum of 20 pounds. So after the age of 60, we're now at least 30 pounds overweight, when we actually should be have lost some of that weight. So the number one thing I think that if you're over age of 40 and you want to start to get control, I think that you need to see your physician and have a real health assessment. And it's very difficult for the average guy to come and say, "Yeah, I need to go to the doctor. I just want to have a routine physical." And that's not sort of geared into our mentality to admit that and want to move forward with that. And one of the biggest things for us is to finding some time to exercise. And everybody says, "Well, I don't really have time in my day for this." But even if and I'll have some slides about exercise, but if you even if you walk a mile a day, take your dog for a walk, take your wife for a walk, maybe I should have said the other way around first, but you lose about 100 calories, you burn 100 calories walking a mile, and that, although it's a little bit, it's every little bit can be very additive to helping with improving your health. And there's the major benefits to exercise are, one, it improves mood. When you do exercise, your body releases a sort of a drug called endorphin, or a hormone called endorphin. It makes you feel better. It helps combat chronic diseases. By being overweight, it puts a strain on our heart, it puts a strain on our joints. The need for back pain, the disabilities for back pain or joint, knee problems, hip problems, all can be lessened if you're not carrying that extra weight. If you can just imagine where you are right now, and if you're 30, 40 pounds overweight, but say we gave you a backpack and you had to put 40 pounds in it, you carried that around all day, 40 pounds of lead in your backpack, well, that's what many of us are doing every day. We take all this extra weight and we walk around with it, and it strains our heart, it strains our kidneys, it puts extra pressure on our backs, our hips, and our knees. Exercise does boost your adrenaline level, promotes better sleeping at night, and working out with a spouse or with friends can be fun. A couple of things that, from my personal standpoint, that I found to be very helpful, that there's a book called Turning Back the Clock by Dr. Bob Arnott, and it's out of print, but you can get it on eBay, or it can still be ordered. But in that, he talks about the special needs of men over the age of 40, from a dietary, from physical standpoint, about how we can, what sorts of exercise we should be doing that to help the over 40 age group regain some of the stuff that they may have lost. I don't know how many of you have seen P90X and heard it's either by Beachbody, Tony Horton, I think, is the head of it. A friend introduced me to it, and I got this series of CDs or DVDs. It's like, I think, 8 DVDs. And my boys, it's P90X called Beachbody, and my boys, who are now 26 and 28, were really giving me a lot of grief about it. And there's one of them is called Ab Ripper X, and there's a series of sit-ups. And I told my oldest son, because he was giving me the hardest time about, you know, oh, yeah, my dad's going to have a beach body, you know, sort of thing. And so I said, okay, you do this Ab Ripper X component. If you can do it, Mom and I'll take you out to dinner anywhere you want in the city of Milwaukee. And the next day I got an email from him that said, Ab Ripper X 1, Aaron 0. and my boys have always been in good shape, played sports all through high school and everything. But and there's also, if you have a smartphone, there's lots of different apps. One of the ones that I found to be personally helpful is called MyFitnessPal, which you can program it in. It can put your age, your height, your weight on it, and it can help you determine a calorie count and an exercise count. And they send you emails if you want. I can get an email reminder saying you've not worked out or not entered any exercise information in 3 days. What's going on? You know, and it can keep on you just like a personal trainer.
What are apps?
It's like for a smartphone or iPhone, it's a program that you can get right for your phone that then you can use to record calories. You can tell, like if you say I have a bowl of oatmeal, it'll tell you how many calories in there, how much fiber is in there. It'll help you keep track from a nutritional standpoint. You can then enter information in it. It says, like, I ran 3 miles today, and so it'll say, well, you should have burned up this many calories during that. It'll help you just keep a program on your phone that will then help you with a log for exercise and nutrition.
You can put a smartphone, something like an iPad or an Android tablet, can do the exact same
yeah.
thing without the monthly cost.
Yeah. Well, yeah. I mean, this MyFitnessPal is a free one, but there is going to be your data costs. Some just mild stuff about calories that are burnt up with some simple exercise. Again, walking, like you get for every mile you walk, you burn up 100 calories. So if you walk for an hour at 3 miles per hour, you're burning 300 calories. Or running up to 1,000 calories. shoveling snow, carrying golf clubs. I like that one personally, because you can then, you know, walk. But it takes 3,500 calories to burn up, to lose a pound. But again, if you walk a mile a day, that's about 3,000 calories that you're going to burn up in a month. But the thing is not to try to do something that's too much all at once. I don't like using the term as a physician a diet or even, you know, from an exercise standpoint, make it sort of lifestyle adjustments so that, we live out in the country and we have a road that goes from our house down driveways out till we get to the main county trunk. That's a half mile, and my wife and I walk our dogs that half mile down, half mile back every day. Over the course of a year, you can lose about then 12 pounds, and a slow, steady process is going to be much more important to maintaining a healthy lifestyle than trying to do something and losing, you know, 12 pounds a month. It's very difficult. People can do that, but then they fall back to if they haven't made a real lifestyle change, if they've just seen this as a temporary thing. And I would really advocate being more of a lifestyle long-term change.
Do you shovel that driveway too?
No, I don't shovel the whole driveway.
Does it matter how fast you're walking when you're walking?
No, if you're going to do the distance, the calories are coming for the distance. Now, if you're going to walk for an hour and you walk faster and you walk that full hour, then you're going to cover more miles, and so from that standpoint, it does. But it's the calories are burnt up for the distance. Yeah.
I don't mean to split hairs, but out of curiosity, when you say how many calories you burn activity, if your body weight was double what it should be, then would the calories you're burning also be higher, at least? Maybe not linear, but...
Yeah, it is adjusted per weight. You're right.
Would it be significantly adjusted or just a little bit? You know, like, if, let's say that you should be 200 and you're 300. Are you going to burn half again more calories or just slightly more?
I believe that from the math standpoint, you should burn the 50% more calories, because it's the energy formula is mass times the distance to equal the, so if you're increasing both of them equally. The other thing is how we eat. It's interesting if you go and you look at like old black and white movies from the 30s and the 40s, everybody looks thin in the 30s, you know, and the sizing, even if you look at, there was a thing that in U.S. News and World Reports a while back that showed the size of a McDonald's hamburger in 1960 and the size of a McDonald's hamburger today, it's like 50% bigger, just the plain hamburger. Mm. And we eat so much more. If you go to like Old Country Buffet or McDonald's, you know, supersize it, just our portions are way more than what we need to eat. And there is some real fundamental math to it, and that just the size really does matter. If you look at how many calories, and this is for me, I'm 56 years old, so I fall into this. What should be my average caloric intake for a day for me to stay at the same weight? And as a physician, I have a relatively sedentary life, and so I should take about 2,300 calories in a day just to stay the same weight with my normal activities. And if I want to lose, I'm going to have to look at that weight loss that I need to take in either 3,500 calories or burn up 3,500 calories for every pound I want to lose.
What's all the numbers up there? 1.4 over 1.
For here?
Multiple activity
factor. Yeah. Oh, okay. So, this is, I'm sorry. That has to do with whether you lead a sedentary life, which would be 1.4, moderate amount of exercise or activity in your life versus, like, if you're in construction, if you're like a bricklayer or a carpenter, you probably burn twice the number of calories as a baseline over the course of your day. So you take that factor and then you multiply it to get that at the end.
How many factor? What's, get all the numbers up there, but I don't know what's what.
Okay, I'm sorry. Yeah, so for your ages, it's this formula here. So I fall into the, at 57, I need to take my basic weight, and it should be your ideal body weight, not really what you weigh. And so for 70 kilogram person, or my ideal body weight is going to be about 154 for 70 kilos. So I multiply that by 11.6, which gives me then 879. All right, it gives me 812 then, plus the 879 over there for my age, and then multiply that by 1.4. So that should be how many calories I burn in a day.
Okay, now what's that 720? That's for the carpenter you're talking about, or what?
The active life would be 2. So because I'm sedentary, I just multiply my 1691 by 1.4 because I'm very sedentary. If I had a moderate amount of physical activity in my day, I would multiply this by 1.7. If I was very active, I'd multiply it by 2.
Oh, okay.
Right. And what's that tell us?
How many calories did you need in a day? Okay. But one of the things that's important is how you take in those calories. And that our bodies are really designed to burn up relatively smaller number of calories at any given time. And if you take in, you know, some people say, oh, I hardly ever eat any lunch, or I don't eat breakfast, I eat just a piece of fruit for lunch, and then I take all my calories at night. Well, your body can't utilize well all those calories at one time. And so if you take in one great big meal a day, then some of that energy gets stored in fat. Well, then what happens is if you get hungry again, and so then you're more likely to take in more. And so it's more important to sort of balance and have 4 to 5 small meals a day than 1 or 2 really large meals in a day. Your body can't handle all those calories, and so it stores some of them as fat. But then when you get hungry, before your body starts to break down the fat, you end up eating again. Yeah.
Give us a quick example of what 4 or 5 small meals are.
Good question. Let's see. I think I have it in right here. So, for me, eating 2,300 to 2,400 calories a day, so 300 calorie breakfast, a snack, a lunch, and so. But what are you asking for? What would be an example of a 300 calorie breakfast? 300 calories would probably be a cup of oatmeal with some skim milk, a piece of fruit, and maybe a piece of toast. If you have a power bar or some sort of something like that, that can be like a snack. 300 calories like that, and then 700 calories, depending on, you know, I mean, if you have a Whopper at lunchtime, that's like 2,500 calories. That's all you're supposed to eat all day. That's just for calories. That's the actual term for regular calories.
As opposed to like fat calories or
what? Calories a calorie. There's more calories per gram of fat than there is per gram of protein or gram of sugar. I skipped a few slides, let me go back. So one of the things that I think is to eat smaller amounts through the day. I mean, have it, and again, you can either, if you really keep a little diary of how much you eat in the course of the day to see, because most people underestimate how many calories they take in a day. And so keep a very simple food log to help you sort of figure out where you are with things. And then there's the concept that Bob Arnott talks about in his book called Feed Forward, and that is that if you, especially if you're out and about, if you're going to, you know, if you bring your lunch, but if you're going to go, like, eat someplace, and you get real hungry, as you're going through, like, a line to decide what you're going to eat, you're going to make a wrong choice, a wrong decision, because the hungrier you are, you're going to say, well, I want to eat more than what, and you end up taking more food, or you take making bad choices for food. And so they talk about eating a little bit through the day that helps you prevent getting real hungry and then subsequently eating the wrong things. Then it's also important to balance the protein and the carbs and the fat that you're eating. So if you're trying to lose weight, it's more important to put more of your calories in from a protein standpoint. And versus more active, and then for if you're real performance oriented, say you're a runner, to take more in carbohydrates. Yeah.
Will this slideshow be online later so we can actually get this stuff?
I don't know if the slideshow, if you want to leave me an email, I can email the whole slideshow to you. But from a health maintenance issue, again, like I said earlier, up to age 40, our bodies are very resistant. But after age 40, especially for men, you should probably start having routine health exams and start having screening for diabetes, hypertension, and being overweight. After age 50, and I can tell you at 56, the real fun begins from your health maintenance, because you should start having an annual prostate exam, and you should have a colonoscopy for the first time. That's right. And then, you know, other history can depend on family, but really from a colon cancer standpoint, which is one of the big things that screening colonoscopy can pick up, and then from prostate cancer standpoint, those are two really important things for men.
After annually,
for prostate, you should have annually after the age of 50. They'll do a colonoscopy at age 50 unless you have a history of a brother or a parent having had colon cancer. Then you should probably have it 10 years before the age at which they were diagnosed. And so, say
after your first one, it's like every 5 years. Right?
After every 5 years, yeah. And then if it's a clean exam, you don't even have any polyps. Now, a lot of times they'll recommend you don't need another study for 10 years. But prostate screening with a blood test called a PSA, and then a digital rectal exam for nodules should be done annually after the age of 50. Yeah.
If you have a clean prostate exam and a clean colon exam, how would you know if you're having some trouble if you're not going back for 10 years? Do you start feeling weak? Do you start gaining weight? And I can research this.
For colon, it can be a change in bowel habits, increasing frequency of stools, dark or tarry stools, if there would be any blood in it. Those would be the two biggest things for colon. Prostate, the symptoms of a large prostate gland, which is common, what's called benign prostatic hypertrophy, that will present as having to get up at night to go to the bathroom, having a hesitancy in your stream to get started, dribbling at the end, and those are sort of in loss of force of the stream. Yeah.
I don't mean to be an antagonist here, but as far as the prostate, reading a lot today, even from the very gentleman who developed that PSA test
right.
back in the 70s or whatever it was, you know, that gives so many false positives.
Right.
You know, and there are some cancer markers, if you want to call that.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if that's what you consider the PSA test.
Yep.
You know, and yet, you know, if you have a reading a little high from the PSA test, then they want to go to biopsy, you know, every other year or something. How does one keep up with some of these changes that have taken place?
That's a really good question. And that's right now, in the last few months, there's been a lot of stuff with that in the news about how PSAs can lead to false testing, basing, and so it has to be something that you should check with your doctor about. But in general, because you can have a large prostate gland, which can slightly elevate your PSA. But if the PSA is real large, and I can tell you, I've had two prostate biopsies, two times I've gone in for prostate biopsies, and they've all been benign. And I have an enlarged prostate, but no prostate cancer. And so, but it's something that the trending is important. And obviously, if you have a screening exam, that PSA is real high. And for PSAs, the baseline should be 4 or less. And so, but if your PSA comes back at 16 or 20, then you know that there's a problem. And so it's they are making adjustments. And again, it's based on one on your family history, two on your personal exam from the urologist or from your family doctor about whether they should proceed. Because they can also do an ultrasound of your prostate that with and without a biopsy based on what they find. And so you don't have to, it doesn't have to, but they can look at for a slight elevation without necessarily doing a biopsy. But you're right, there's that still is a very area of controversy. But if you have a, especially if you have a, would happen to have a family history of prostate cancer, to have at least a screening test done so you have a baseline established. Yeah?
On that question about length of time between your
colonoscopy,
when the doctor checks your prostate, he can take a smear at that time, and if any blood traces show up in it, then you, that's cause for
right
moving that timetable up.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah.
Well, do you believe in, like, supplementing with, like, soft palmetto and stuff? Do you think people should start supplementing before they actually have that?
Probably not. I mean, as far as I know, there's been no document that that's going to help decrease your risk of prostate cancer or prostate problems.
Has God created us so inferior that we have so much prostate and colon cancer and cancer and everything in our bodies? Or is it the food that we're ingesting, you know, with the preservatives and growth hormones and everything like that, being non-organic food is what I'm saying.
Mm-hmm.
You know, does that make a difference?
Well, colon cancer, it seems to. I mean, there's the in prostate cancer, probably not, but there's the amount of fat and meat proteins and charcoaled meats have increased risk of colon cancer in those diets or in people whose diets are high in those things. Yeah.
I once heard the statement that if you live long enough, every male would develop prostate cancer. Is that true? And if so, what would that age be? Would it be like 110 or?
Actually, pretty much after the age of 60. If you took out 10 guys or 60 guys' prostates who are 60, about 60% of them would have traces. If you looked very carefully through the whole prostate gland, they would find traces of cancer. And that's the other thing that the PSA is, that whether they're finding clinically significant prostate cancers. But by the age of 80, almost 80% of men are going to have some small focus of prostate cancer in their prostate. And so that's why just doing the test isn't going to tell you the whole picture. And most of those are clinically insignificant. And that the vast majority of those guys over the age of 80, although they have prostate cancer, aren't going to die of prostate cancer or even become symptomatic of their prostate cancer.
If you were to go one or two more steps to age 90 or 100, which, you know, I have people at the age of my family, then what would those numbers
pretty be? Pretty much the same. It pretty much tracks your percent. Your percent matches your age over the age of 60.
Just a question along the line of what I raised, and thank you for, you know, answering what you did about the prostate PSA test that I asked about. But my two older children who are in their 50s, one a registered nurse and one a medical microbiologist, were trained, you know, 3 decades ago, let's say.
Mm-hmm.
And
I know the feeling.
In the area of blood pressure and cholesterol levels and so on, what they were taught, you know, 3.5 decades ago, in contrast to the levels that are out there today, for instance, I'll just use blood pressure.
Mm-hmm.
You know, Renee said, you know, when she was taught 140 blood pressure for my age, I'm going to be 75 this month, was perfectly normal, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And now my GP wants me to be below 120.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and my blood pressure is about 140, and I'm on 2 low pressure blood pressure medications. And they said, Dad, when I was taught 140 at your age was perfectly fine.
Right.
I don't understand stuff like that. That's somewhat like with the prostate, but a little different.
Well, it's similar in that we're finding as more studies are being done and larger numbers of people are being put into these collective pools for gathering information, they're finding that. And the reason is it's not that 140 is necessarily that bad, but that we know that, and this has been used for lots of different things, that your risk of having a stroke with a blood pressure of 140 is maybe only 10% moving forward over a 5-year period at age 75. But if that blood pressure comes down to 120, that drops it down to less than 5%. You know, and the same thing they're finding with blood sugars. It used to be when I was in training that especially when someone came in from the stress of the hospital, that if their blood sugars were 120 or under, that was perfectly normal. We now find that if we can get and keep their blood sugar at 100, between 80 and 100, that their risk of infection, risk of complications, the long-term complications of the diabetes are going to be less. And so it's not that, and so they're just finding out more information about it when we get larger people in some of these pools. Does that make sense? Oops. some of the things I also wanted to address from this is again, as being a stewardship, is looking at helping steward your wife and your children. For women, their health issues begin in maintenance at a much younger age. And I don't know how many of you in the room know when your wife's last pap smear was, but probably every one of you in the room's wife will tell you when you had your last prostate exam, because we talked about it and we complained about it so much, where they have to go in and have pelvic exams and exams much more frequently. But the women in your family should start having annual pap exams, which is a scraping of the cervix of the uterus, as well as a pelvic exam after the age of 18. They should have mammograms done beginning at age 40, unless they have a strong family history where someone, either a sibling, one of their sisters, or their mom had a breast cancer, then it should start 10 years below that. So if, say, your wife's mom had breast cancer at age 44, then your wife should have her first screening mammogram at age 34. Then also, just like us, after the age of 40, to have an initial screening for high blood pressure and for diabetes. And the colonoscopy for women is the same as men, should have an initial screening at age of 50.
These cancers, this breast cancer and prostate cancer,
mm-hmm.
Is it is it just because my dad had prostate cancer, that, or could my dad have lung cancer? Then I shouldn't talk about a prostate cancer.
As far as I know, there's no correlation between lung cancer and prostate cancer.
Well, I mean, any brain cancer, whatever.
Yeah, and so, no, I mean, if they had lung cancer, you don't need to have a screening prostate exam any earlier than that. Is that what you're asking?
Right.
Yeah, no, it's not any cancer. It's specific to those cancers. For our kids, our immunizations are important, and making now today is totally different than when we went to school, but now kids, I think, have to have their hepatitis before they even get to high school, much less colleges, but the other immunizations. And the other thing is child and adolescent obesity is significantly on the rise. In 1963 to 1970, only 4% of 6 to 11-year-olds were considered obese, and 5% of 12 to 19-year-olds, where that number has jumped up fourfold to now around 2000, 16% of 6 to 11-year-olds are considered obese, meaning twice their body weight, and 12 to 19-year-olds is up to 16%. Again, just as a challenge to offer your families a living sacrifice, I think that if, like the analogy that was used this morning by Steve Sonderman, that if a man goes to church, 90% of his family, 90% of the time his family will be in church. And the same thing, I think that men have the ability to lead their family into healthy lifestyle choices, and that God has entrusted your wife to you and your kids to you, and that we should be good stewards of that blessing. Any other questions about health or health care? Yeah.
What about supplements? I've talked to various people. I'm not currently taking any vitamins, but they said, well, you got to take vitamins. It kind of balances everything out.
If you're eating a well-balanced diet, which includes 3 to 5 servings of fresh fruit and vegetables a day, you don't need to take any supplements. And that there's been a lot of studies that have been showing that if you take like vitamin C, vitamin A supplements in these mega dose quantities of, there's like 1,000 milligrams, and you can buy vitamin C, vitamin A, and that most of that they can collect in your stool. And that the dietary vitamin industry is totally unregulated by the FDA. I mean, and that's why you can... GNC. It's not that they don't have good things there, but if you're eating a balanced diet, you have better absorption of the vitamins that come from an orange than by taking an extra vitamin supplement.
What about the business of probiotics, the desirable flora that are needed in your intestines to
right.
promote?
Yeah, I mean, we have lots and lots of bacteria in our colons, and if unless it's been affected by either medicines, specifically antibiotics, there's nothing that you need to add to your GI tract. It's there. There's plenty of this stuff with bacteria there.
You talk about having fruits, so many servings of fruits and vegetables.
Mm-hmm.
What if you really love vegetables and not fruit, or vice versa? Does it matter whether there are certain? They seem to put them together, and that confuses me.
Right. I mean, it's a balance. I mean, there's certain things that, like the B vitamins, are much more common. You can get them in other. If you just like vegetables, where you're going to get a lot of the B vitamins in greens, spinach, broccoli, where you don't get quite the amount of vitamin C in some of those. But most vegetables, tomatoes. Tomatoes actually a fruit. Strictly speaking, but yet it has high amounts of vitamin C in it. And so it's a balanced standpoint, looking at what you're taking is obviously important, not to exclude necessarily one, but most vitamins can be supplemented looking at just fruits or just vegetables.
So it doesn't matter.
Yeah, right. Yeah.
You said your protein count, when you're obviously in a weight loss, you want a higher protein count? Do you not believe in supplementing with like a whey protein or like a casein?
I mean, is it
like a supplemental?
Right. I mean, in general, you should have about for just maintaining your muscle mass, 1 gram of protein per day per kilogram. And so, if you weigh 70 kilos or 154 pounds, you should take in about 70 grams of protein.
But you're not going to be able to get that from food. Like, if you obviously are working, you know, just cook up a chicken breast.
But if you take a half a cup of skim milk, that's got 10 grams of protein in it. And so it's not difficult to get to that 70. Now, if you're trying to gain muscle mass, you can supplement it with whey proteins, which from the cost standpoint, they're very expensive because you can get that same whey protein in other things unless you're trying to, depend on what your total caloric intake you're trying to limit.
Alcohol. How much alcohol per week is too much? Since we're in Wisconsin, it's kind of a culture.
Yeah. From a cardiac protective standpoint, 4 ounces is more than that is no longer protective or helpful.
4 ounces per week.
Yeah. No, per day.
Oh, per day.
Yeah.
So you have basically 2 drinks maybe a day.
Yeah.
Anything more than that's going to be a problem.
Right. Depending on how you're taking them and when you're taking them, things like that. Yeah.
What about salt? Salt on my tomatoes.
Uh huh. In processed foods, there's lots and lots of salt, and it's a major contributor to high blood pressure. If you don't have high blood pressure, it's not a problem. You can usually handle the extra salt. You'll get rid of it in either your stool and your urine.
Yeah, I was just wondering, time to time I'll get like a cramp in my leg and my wife will say, oh, you're not eating enough calcium. Is there any correlation?
Not necessarily, no, but it's... People who have low calciums can have a lot of spasm, but most of the time the intermittent calcium or intermittent cramps that most people present with, their serum calcium their blood calcium is normal. Yeah?
You haven't touched anything on cholesterol, and what's your thoughts on the statin drugs? How safe are they? Or?
I'm on a statin drug. I think you have to look at it from a standpoint of what your baseline is. There are risks with the statin drugs, although that risk is very low. On the order of like 3 or 4 per 1,000 people have trouble. I mean, by trouble, I mean liver problems. And so if you're on a statin drug, you need to have a baseline liver test, and then, like, it's 6 months and 12 months. But for most of us, the cholesterol is a major problem, and we know that if you, like, even though I run 2 to 3 times a week, I watch my diet, if I'm not on a statin drug, my cholesterol is over 200. Like I said in the beginning, my grandfather, we believe, died of a heart attack. My own dad's had heart bypass surgery and things like that. And so I'm concerned about trying to keep my cholesterol as low as possible. And so for people with my type of health, family health history, I think that their serum cholesterol should be 150 or under. Other people there's family hypercholesterolemias that they have cholesterol anywhere from 300 to 600, and they don't have a problem with it. But it is a major, major concern. Lots of people will get muscle aching or cramping from statin drugs. And I do try to exercise regularly. For me, the day after I exercise, I have a lot of muscle aches and pains. And for a while, I thought that may be related to to the statin. So I went with consulting my family doctor. I stopped my drugs, exercised more, really watched what I ate, still had the aches and pains after exercising, and my cholesterol went back up over 200. So I'm back on the statins.
If you don't have a family history, what is a safe number?
Under 200 for a cholesterol, under 150 for triglycerides.
You can find the national guidelines on the web. ATP3 guidelines is what it's called.
Yeah, there's lots of good things on the web where you can find out. Yep, you have a question?
Do you think you should use CoQ10 when you're using statin drug?
I don't know. I don't know if it makes a difference. From the muscle discomfort, and you're talking about the stress in the joints?
Muscle discomfort just with using a statin drug. They say using CoQ10 is beneficial.
Yeah, I don't know that much about that. Using for that, yep.
Yeah. What if you're talking about kidney or liver or kidney problems with statin drugs?
Yeah.
Or what if you have to take a blood thinner, Pranaxo, as you're on statin?
I mean, you need to have the baseline check. For the most part, it's not going to be a problem.
Yeah.
But in a small group of people, they will find elevation in some of the liver function studies then. Mm-hmm. Pradax is a new blood thinner that's been out 18 months or so that helps. Some people have to be on a drug called warfarin or Coumadin for if they have history of plaque buildup in their arteries, and Pradax is another drug that has less bleeding complications associated with it.
Yeah, I was going to say, I have, irregular heartbeat.
Atrial fibrillation.
Atrial fibrillation, that's
right.
Why I'm on the Pradaxis.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm also on Ticosin. But I know you're talking about the cramping. You're just getting me now. So.
Okay. Anything else? Well, thanks for coming. Hope you have a good day.